And good morning, good afternoon, good evening. And if you're in Australia and New Zealand, good middle of the night. Well done. Very, very impressed that you've managed to keep yourself going. And hopefully you're sitting down there nice and warm with the drink of your choice, as is, of course, everybody else. Welcome. My name is Andrew McMurray, or Macca if you prefer. I'm here with Pierre Roman, and we have Kyle Rosenthal at the back of the room, and you can't see him right now. But he will be coming on fairly soon. We're just going to be doing quite a lot of stuff today. This is migrating legacy Windows Server to 2012 R2 and Microsoft Azure. And we are, of course, here in a jumpstart today. We've got quite a packed agenda to take you through. Lots and lots of demo, lots of discussion around the migration of your legacy servers. Not just talking 2003 today, but, of course, 2008, 2008 R2. And, of course, these days, legacy also means
2012
as well, because we're dealing with 2012 R2. So basically, we'll start off by talking and giving across to Pierre. We'll be talking about the end of the world as you know it. So with Windows Server 2003, soon to be end of life, what are we going to do about migrating all of those particular workloads that we still have running Windows Server 2003 across to 2012 R2? We'll follow that up by looking at some cluster migration, and then moving across to migrating WSUS. We'll then follow that up with some Active Directory migration. And then just a change of pace, looking at how to take our Hyper-V VMs and move those across to Microsoft Azure. So lots and lots of stuff that we're dealing with today. So in terms of introductions of our speakers, starting with myself, my name is Macca. For those of you that may or may not know me, my real name is Andrew McMurray, but everyone seems to call me Macca for some reason. If you're on Twitter, at Macca, M-S-O-Z is me. I've been a technical evangelist now for Windows infrastructure for the last couple of years. For Microsoft Australia. Basically, prior to that, I was in the sales organisation, essentially been looking after Windows Server, Windows Client and System Center for the last few years. And I am joined initially today by Pierre Roman. Pierre.
How you doing?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Good. So we have a session with Australians and Canadians.
We do indeed, which means the majority of you out there cannot understand a word we're saying. Sorry about that.
A French-Canadian for that. So I'm a technical evangelist with Microsoft Canada, and I work with the technical communities at large. Anything that's IT pro, from the nuts and bolts guy to the management. And of course, I do this in English or en français.
Excellent. So I do believe you're doing your entire session today in French, isn't that right?
Absolutely.
Cool. Fantastic. All right, and we also have with us today Kyle Rosenthal, who will be introducing himself a little bit later on, but we have a pretty little bio slide of his to show you. And as you can see there, Kyle is looking particularly fierce. Ready to go. He is an MCT with Spider Consulting, and he's been doing these types of events for years. If you've been to any tech ed around the world, you've probably seen or heard of Kyle already, so we'll be welcoming him on a little bit later in the broadcast. All right, well, I think we might dispense with the pleasantries and get straight into the end of the world.
That's right. It's the end of the world as you know it. One of the things is, when you say it's the end of the world as you know it, we're kind of joking a little bit, but it's not really joking. It is the end of support for Microsoft Server 2003. Wow, that was hard to come out. So our agenda today, we're going to talk about why migrating versus an upgrade, an in-place upgrade, or Windows Server 2003, the support status. So what is the point, or what is the amount of time, and what the risks are for that. We're going to look at some migration tools, and we're going to actually look at migrating foundation services. And the reason we look at specifically at migration foundation services is because there are some things that you want to move to Azure, to Microsoft Azure, and there are some things that you can't. You still need a DHCP server in your environment. You still need a DNS server in your environment. Your file shares are most likely going to be still in your environment. Of course, with Microsoft Azure file shares, there's some there's definitely some opportunities there, but we still have to look at it. So in term when we talk about foundation services, we generally talk about DNS, DHCP, file shares, DFS, print servers, and so on. So that's what we're going to look at today. So when we talk about migration versus upgrade, why are we doing that? Or why are we making a statement about making that, making sure that? Well, first of all, it provides a transition path from X to 86 to 64. Because a lot of people are still running 2003 32-bit application, which can't be upgraded to 2012 since there's no 32-bit version of 2012 or 2012 R2. Physical to virtual and vice versa. So you can't, it's easy to just migrate to a virtual machine and back and forth. The full server to server core and vice versa. In 2003, you could, in 2008, I mean, you could go to install server core and do all the nice stuff on it. Now with 2012 R2, you can install it with full GUI and remove that if you want later. But all of these components kind of get into play when you look in that transition path. Plus, it's a clean operating system. If you're still running 2003 boxes, chances are you've got them running for a long time.
And very long time.
And a long time. And what happens when you have a system that you keep running for a long time?
Starts getting slow.
It starts getting slow. You start getting some, you've installed and removed some software on it. You may have missed a patch or something. You never end up with a really clean OS. So if you were going to migrate that or do an in-place upgrade of that, so you're basically migrating all the bad stuff at the same time. So doing a migration instead of an upgrade provides you that opportunity to do a clean system install. And the most important part for that, for me specifically, is to reduce the risk of the downtime. If you're doing a migration, your target, your source server is still available. So if your migration fails halfway through, not a problem. Turn the service back on, wipe the machine that was your target machine, and then from there on you can try it again. Figure out what went wrong, fix that. Is that a script? Is it network bandwidth? Whatever the problem might be, and at that point you can just start going at it again. So their tasks are performed while your server is still live, so you have that back out scenario going for that. So that's the scary slide, the end of support. So what we talk about, end of support for server 2012, for server 2003, we're talking about July 14th, 2015, which is 300. Actually, I think the slide is wrong now because I wrote that slide a few days ago. I think it's more like 355 days of support.
That's heaps, isn't it? I'll be fine, won't I?
Not quite, because I've talked to the guys at in the server group. The engineers, the guys that in the product group, and say and the consensus is that the optimistic estimate to do a server migration is 200 days.
I've still got heaps. Got 362.
Yes, that's as long as you don't have any applications on top of it. If you've got applications on top of it, you've got workloads on top of it. Especially if you've got third-party workloads. If it's just file and print and DFS and DHCP and DNS, maybe 200 days is enough. But if you've got a heap of 2003 servers that you want to migrate, well, maybe 200 days is not enough. But if you on top of that, if you have Exchange, if you've got SharePoint, SQL, or a third-party app that are running on top of that, your migration time will just grow almost exponentially.
So what we're saying is really, as soon as this jump starts finished, we need to be on that. We need to be getting going right now.
I'm saying that if you guys have not already started, you may be late already.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun.
So when we talk about support, what does end of support means? It means no update. We all went through this not too long ago with the end of support for XP.
It's XP.
In my audience, some of my guys, my IT pros in Canada, I always, when I go at an event and somebody would say, nah, you're going to extend it again.
It's exactly what we get in Australia.
Where are you going to extend it again? I don't have to worry. We're going to scream loud enough that you're going to extend it again. Well, I'm sorry. last year, 37 critical updates were released for 2003 R2. Next year, after July, none. So that means there's no compliance.
Ooh.
So if you're a commercial entity that does online banking or not online banking, but online commerce, and you have, if you have to apply to the PCI compliance, so the Credit Card Payment Association, you would not be compliant, and they may, the slide says will no longer, but they may stop doing business with you until you're compliant again. So 2003 R2 will not pass compliance audits.
Mm.
No safe haven. The other people that I'm talking to said, that's okay, I'm just going to virtualize it.
Ooh.
Okay, you're taking the hardware portion out of the equation, but the server itself, the server 2003 is still running.
Exactly.
Still needs to be patched, still need to be managed. Well, no, that doesn't need to be patched anymore because there will not be any patches. It will impact also Small Business Server 2003.
Yes.
It will increase your operating costs because when something goes wrong, if you now you have to spend an extra amount of time trying to figure out, okay, since I'm not getting the patch for these attack or anything like that, how do I mitigate that? So you need a lot more time around it. And then discontinued support for many applications, because many applications will say, well, this was supported on 2003, but 2003 is no longer supported,
right,
therefore we're not supporting it anymore.
You can't expect your third parties to keep supporting this stuff forever.
No. Well, it's funny because sometimes they expect us to support it forever.
Mm, true.
But we're not. 10 years, I think, is, in my opinion, is probably industry leading.
Yep.
5 years of mainstream support, 5 years of extended support for any server or enterprise-grade software is really, really good. So now is the time to act. Like we said earlier, if you have not already started your planning, you may already be behind the eight ball.
Mm.
And when I talk about planning, migrating the workloads themselves is probably the easiest portion of the migration.
Yes.
Because the migration process, and I've been in the business for almost 25 years now, which is dating me a little bit.
Looking good.
I'm not too decrepit for an old guy. But it's the process has never changed. The process will probably never really change. The tools to enable you to do things like that have changed dramatically.
Mm.
But first, you have to discover, catalog your software, catalog your workloads. You always end up with these phantom applications that you go to a business meeting and you say, who owns this server and that application that runs on it? And nobody raises their hand.
And indeed, you'll sometimes find applications that haven't been used for years.
Absolutely, but they're still up, they're still being run, they're using resources that they don't need. In the past, I have used, in part of my discovery session, once I had done the due diligence of emailing everybody, going to meetings, asking the business units who owns this software, who owns this service, and nobody would come back and say, I do, I've used the scream method.
The scream method. And what would that entail?
You unplug it from the network and you wait for somebody to scream.
Absolutely.
It actually works sometimes. And sometimes you unplug a machine and you realize a month and a half down the road that nobody has used it.
Mm.
So you need to catalog your software, your workloads, figure out who owns them. Are they still supported, which is your second section of the migration process. So you assess your workloads and you assess your application. Are they supported in a new platform? Is there a new version that is supported? Is there a migration path from that old version to the new version? Will it fill my needs? And so on. That's the assessment portion. And now we have with the map toolkit, there are some tools in there to allow you to do that discovery and assessing.
And that's a bit of a sleeper, the Map Toolkit, in actual fact. There's a lot of people that don't know about it, and it's been around for a very long time. It's one of those things that you really should be checking out. It's a Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, if you don't know about that one. It's a free download. Basically, it will go out, it will inventory all of the systems on your network, whether they're Windows or not, and also give you an idea of what workloads are running. And we'll even run various tests across them to see, you know, which of the resources in your environment can be migrated to certain versions of the operating system, what workloads will work, what workloads will fail, and is definitely something worth checking out. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and there's a nice thing about the MAPA toolkit is, as you mentioned, it'll give you suggestion, but it also highlights some of the workloads that are good or great candidates for either 2012, 2012 R2, but for Azure. Mm. So, because if you have to migrate your workload, now is the time for you to look at that workload and say, is that a great candidate for cloud services? Do I really need to manage this piece of hardware, or can I offload that to Azure and just worry about the virtual machine and the software that's running on it and kind of decouple myself from having to change hardware every 2-3 years?
Absolutely.
So, and that's the next section. That's your target. Where are you going to put all these workloads and all these applications? 2012 R2, Azure, depends. Mm. Maybe that application is no longer available and it's just a web application. That's where you identify your targets. Once your targets are identified, then you do the migration or the move. Mm. So that's that. That's one part of the process, and it's typically the shortest part of that process. So let's say, for sake of arguments, that we've done our catalog, that we have assessed our workloads, that we have picked targets, and now we have to do the migration.
But surely we could just sit here for the next 150 days and do all of that now as a demonstration.
Absolutely.
You've got time, right?
We're in a time machine. Woo! So we have to prepare migration tools. Migration tools are built into 2012 and 2012 R2, but they have to be packaged up onto 2012 R2 and then deployed on older operating system. So when we look at preparing the migration tool, make sure that your target servers have sufficient disk space.
And I would argue that if you don't have 23 meg of disk space available to you on your server, the chances are there are various other issues happening at this point anyway.
Yes, you may have other problems, such as a lack of monitoring to tell you that your server's got less than 23 megs worth of space.
I think we've got something that can help with that.
Yeah. Mm. Hmm. System Center, maybe?
Nice.
Did you see the plug? .NET Framework 2.0 installed on servers that are running Server 2003. So PowerShell 1.0 or later installed on 2003. Anything after 2003, PowerShell was pretty much built in. On 2003, you actually have to download PowerShell 1.0 and install it manually. We assume that the people that are all you guys at home or at your offices right now can download and install a EXE. Mm. So we're not going to run through installing PowerShell on those servers. So that's pre-done. Mm. Save a little bit of time. So let's just jump into a demo. So I'm going to switch here to my virtual machine. I've got to authenticate because strong password is the norm, correct? And let's look at my desktop here. And there we go. So there's my old 2003 DC for my domain. That's 10/2014. That's a test domain that I created for when we did TechEd North America. And on it, I've got my Active Directory. I've got a DHCP server.
Got it rocking there.
My scope. Say that again?
You got everything, man.
I got our. So I've got my Active Directory integrated zone, which I'm not going to talk really into about when we talk about migrating DNS, because Kyle is going to address that when he does migrating Active Directory itself. Because Active Directory, if you've got your DNS zone that is Active Directory integrated, by migrating Active Directory or by bringing up the 2012 DC, you've actually migrated your DNS zone at the same time.
Yes, indeed.
It's the easiest part of the DNS migration. But we have a flat file here, or a flat zone, that is hosted on that server that we may want to move to the next one. So we're going to look at that. But first, let's look at our tools. So let's go to my 2012 server.
Lovely.
And I am a terrible typist, so to save everybody a lot of lot of pain of watching me type these things. I've just kind of pre-typed.
I'm so glad we've got out of that that habit now of saying the demo's not real unless you type it. And that is something that we suffered from for many years. And I am probably the worst typist in the world as well. I think everybody in this room is fairly terrible at typing. And there's nothing worse than getting right through that demo. You've got a massive command line that you're going to throw out there. You get one thing wrong, it fails. The entire room erupts into laughter. At least we're not going to cop that today.
No.
Unless, of course, guys up the back, you want to laugh at us. We should be all right. Yeah, thanks. That'll do. No worries.
So as you can see, like the install Windows feature, you could do that through Server Manager. Mm-hmm. I've been in business long enough. When I started, there was no such thing as a GUI. So I learned everything in command line and bash and this type of stuff. And now we went to GUI, and now the pendulum swinging back the other day. I've always been partial to command line.
So you're hardcore is what you're saying here?
No, I'm not hardcore. I'm nowhere near what like Sean Kearney and these guys are. But I know enough. Let's put it this way. If I have to do something once, I'll use the GUI. If I have to do something over and over and over again, I will figure out a way to write it into either a batch file, a script, PowerShell.
Absolutely.
So,
and anyone who is not command line hardcore will actually be getting 3 points less at the completion of this course in MBA today.
So if you look at the command, it's pretty easy. Like install dash Windows feature migration, because they're, like I said, it's built in, and throw it onto the server W2012R2-FS for file server. I'm going to do that again, but I'm going to point it at my DC because I'm still going to need the tools on there. Mm. So remotely install the tools on there.
Nice.
So, they're pretty much done. So now my tools are installed. Ta-da! Wasn't that a great little demo?
Pretty impressive, man.
Pretty impressive, eh? Now, what we need to do, that's now that it's installed, is I got to go locally on that box. So I'm going to change directory. Yeah, okay, let me go to that right. Paste. Oh, that's why. See, what were you saying about mistyping earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? You jinxed me.
Sorry, man.
And basically, once everything's installed, I'm going to do a smig deploy. So server migration tool deploy. I'm going to say to package it because I want to send it to other machine. Mm. I got to specify which architecture I'm sending it to. So this case is the AMD 64, so a 64-bit architecture. Mm-hmm. And I got to state which OS I'm packaging it for. Mm. So if I've got 2008 boxes in there, then that changes the command because I have to specifically do it for 2008.
And that that AMD 64 is particularly important because I see so many people now just instantly going x64 when they think about 64-bit. And when it comes to this particular command line, you're going to be very frustrated if you type x64 at that point.
Absolutely. And then the path, which in my case, I'm just going to copy it to a network share so that I don't have to put it onto a network, the sneaker net.
Mm.
So I put it in a USB key and run over to the next server. So I'm just going to run this. Okay, again, the wrong command line window. The path could not be created because access was denied. Wow. Well, this is nice, isn't it?
Ooh. Yes, there's nothing worse than being denied access to your own server, especially one that you've built.
That's right, and it's there. So let's look at it this way. Let's do this. Path, let's make it
space between your path there.
Do it locally.
Beautiful.
So it did. It did all my stuff. So I've got here, and I've got the directory that is good, that we created. So server migration tool for 2003 and to an AMD 64. So now I'm going to copy that to my network drive, so my other servers will have access to it. And I don't have access there. All right, so that went well. Let's just jump on to the next machine and see if I can connect directly to that server. So that's going to be the U 2012 R2-FS D dollar sign. And there we go.
Yeah,
so
we
I've got it here.
Awesome.
There's always a way. There's always a way. So I can copy that locally. And then once I've got it locally, just change my directory to this and just run smig deploy. And it's already running on this because I went ahead and did it on that server, but I have to do it again on my DC. Where's my DC? There it is. So do my copy again. W2012R2-FS. Dollar sign, copy. So that's the drawback to this system, is that you have to copy it locally and then run it. However, if you have SMS, I'm dating myself again, System Center Configuration Manager.
You're just remembering the good old days, right?
The good old days. Yeah. You can use System Manager to actually bulk deploy on all of your collections of 2003 servers.
Absolutely.
Which makes it a lot easier.
I remember the good old days of SMS2, and that was when I started getting gray hair, I believe.
Yes. So as you can see here, now it's created a PowerShell. I'm just going to make it a little bigger for everybody to see properly. So it did install a PowerShell module specifically for the migration tools. Mm-hmm. So, ta-da!
Right.
My PowerShell, my tools are now deployed.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. No applause. No, that's too much. So that's it. So if we go back to my deck, we've deployed the migration tools. Now, let me remind you of one little thing. Not every tool is Those tools are very, very useful. However, there are other tools that will do the job for you. It just depends on what your environments are. We don't have magic insight into all of your environments, so we provide as many tools as we can. But when we talk about later, when we talk about migrating file shares or migrating large amount of data, maybe there's two ways of doing it. You can use the migration tools to copy all of the data and the file information or the file share information.
And the ICLs and all
the ICLs and so on. Or you can use RoboCopy.
Mm. RoboCopy is a great tool.
RoboCopy is actually a fantastic tool. Plus, in this case, it's actually better because RoboCopy multi-threaded. You can run multiple instances of it.
Yes.
And it's not going to slow down, as opposed to the migration tool does one share at a time and then migrates it, because it's more of a send and receive. So you have one part of the tools that's on the 2003 server that actually takes the information, packages it, encrypts it. That's the good part about it, though. Mm-hmm. So encrypts it, sends it across the wire to a machine that's sitting on the other end who's listening for that data. Mm. So depending on what you're doing, look at your options. RoboCopy is a great option. The server migration tools are a great option, and so on. So if we move on and then we start migrating our foundation services, and at TechEd, somebody asked me, what the heck do you consider a migration service? A foundation service.
Well, I would have thought DHCP, DNS,
absolutely.
Stuff like that, really core networking services, right?
It's everything that your rest of your network is built on top of. So it's really the foundation. So we're not going to talk about migrating your workloads today. We're not going to talk about migrating Exchange, because we could do a whole jumpstart on just that, or SharePoint. There's just way too much content for us to look at. But there are some great resources online on TechNet, on canitpro.net, and so on, to actually show you how to migrate those workloads.
And you guys do those marvelous step-by-step blog articles on CanITPro, and I would highly recommend anyone out there, no matter where you are in the world, check that out, canitpro.net. Step-by-step blog articles, brilliant, absolutely brilliant way to learn various types of procedures that need to be done.
Thanks for the plug.
No worries, man. I hope I get one back.
Yes. What's your URL again?
Don't worry about it.
So if we look at migrating our first our first foundation service. So let's look at DNS. It's the easiest part of your migration if you're running an Active Directory integrated zone. Because then all you have to do, and Kyle, we'll talk about that a little later, is introduce a new DC into your environment with a DNS service on it, make your zone DNS integrated, ta-da, you're done.
What if I'm hardcore? What if I'm old school?
What
if I've got a local one?
That's right. Well, one of the things is there's no tools. Even in the migration tool, there's nothing that was built specifically for DNS. So you kind of have to get in there with the crowbar and the and the shovel and actually do a little bit of work. But it's not that complicated. Like I said, if you got Active Directory, you introduce, you allow to replicate, to update your DHCP service, you're done. If you've got a standalone DNS environment, you have to export and copy the zone configuration to a location on the network. Then you have to import that configuration and those zone files to your next server and update your DNS with your DHCP with DNS address change. Mm-hmm. There's a few little things in there that you need to clean up, because if you've got a server, a DNS server that has both, like in our case, that has both the Active Directory integrated zone and your flat file zone, it's going to export both. You don't want to import that into the other one if it's not Active Directory integrated on the other side. So there's some cleanup to do. Plus, it's going to throw in a lot of that the standard custom or sample code that the export gives. So you got to clean that up. Mm-hmm. So let's go right to our DHCP server and run that. So where is my DC? My DC is here. And again, let's go to my apps, my migration, because, oh, not the HTTP, DNS. I got a little script.
Nice.
Nice thing, first thing to do is always to stop your service. Oops. Stop the service.
Absolutely.
So you may not want to do that in
middle
in
of
production.
The day, maybe?
Yeah. So you might want to look for a maintenance window. Then we want to export, and our registry key, and I will post, I will give the link to the file later. I'll post those files because it's basically local machine system, current control set, service, DNS, and all the parameters that are in that. So we want to export that to a DNS reg file.
That would be maybe a great place to put that might be the CanIT probe.
Absolutely.
.net.
Yeah.
Right, see?
So if I look here now on my, where did I put my DNS info? See, there's a few patches that have been put on that server.
Just a few.
Just a few.
There's nothing quite like that building a VM in 2008 or 2003 today to do a demo and then realizing you've got to hit Windows Update and,
yes,
and it all goes from there.
And okay, so now I've got the parameters. So what my previous local home name was, what the boot method, the admin configured, all of the information about my DNS. So that's just how to configure the service itself. So that's fine. Now we go back to my DNS migration and now I will export the actual data. Make sure I got the whole command. Command prompt. Reg, okay, copy, let's try that again. Operation completed successfully. So now I've got my second one here. And now is where we're looking at data that you may not need. My 20 zone is my server that's my Active Directory integrated zone. My contoso.com zone is my flat file zone.
Right.
The 10.2014 is my Active Directory integrated zone. So here.
Just get rid of it.
You just get rid of it because I don't need to import it into the next machine.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Save that yes, take these two files and copy them, and it's probably going to give me an error again, trying to go to my migration. No, yep, that worked this time. Now remember, our service is still stopped. Mm. So unless you want to copy or have some problems, you got to make sure that you start it again. But first, we got to copy the rest of the DNS information. So that flat file we talked about needs to be copied. Zero file there. Ooh. I'm having such a great day.
You're mapping a network drive there, I think.
Yeah. So, okay, so that's a DNS. So let's go back to my local drive. And see these contoso.com, these files? That's what it's trying to copy.
It's grabbing those .dns databases.
That's right. So we go back here, paste it here, yes to all. Okay, so now I have just make sure that that's there. I don't need the backup. I don't need the sample files. That's it. Go to my next server. So I'm going to go to my 2012 server that's here. Mm-hmm. I've already got a DNS server running, DNS manager, but there's no zone,
nothing
no forward. Mm-hmm. It's just a plain Jane server that has been just sitting there. So let's go, because I want to use my script again. Tell me I got access. Yes. DNS script, same thing. Mm-hmm. We want to stop it here. And copy everything to my local drive. This worked great, by the way, last night when I was...
It always works great in the hotel room.
Always worked great in the hotel room. So let's just copy this manually to my location, Windows, System 32, DNS, paste, replace those files, done. On import those registry files. Okay, let's do it this way, the old-fashioned way. Key successfully. We're done. Start our DNS server. Now, one of the things that happened is most likely it was having some issues because I've turned off my DNS and I was trying to resolve a name.
Exactly.
No, didn't think about that. So if we go back to our DNS and we look at it and we refresh, now we have our forward lookup zone and we have our reverse lookup zone.
Fantastic. Look at that.
So it's that easy.
Yep.
Well, it's that easy if you know how to type.
And of course, we did that right in the middle of the night so that we didn't hurt anybody.
That's right. So now my service is back up. Now, one of the things that I did not do in the script is you got to go back to your original server, go to your DHCP, because now in my scope options, my new server is, can't remember what the IP address was on it.
Yeah, but right now, of course, everyone's going to the wrong DNS server and they're not getting anything, so.
Absolutely. So look. 11, okay, that's fine. Add, apply,
good. Fantastic.
And we're migrated. Even better if you can actually decommission that server and replace the IP address on the on your new server, or add that old IP address to your server so you have multiple, so that your NIC has got multiple IP addresses, because we all know that somebody somewhere in your environment will have that hard-coded into a configuration file
absolutely
for an application.
Right. Absolutely right. And that's the scream factor right there.
That's the scream factor, but that's also where your catalog, SS, and target part of your migration comes into play.
That's right. And
that's
if you've
absolutely
done that successfully, then theoretically we should know ahead of time that this has the potential for an issue and we can avoid that.
Yes. So now, for DHCP, because we have our DHCP server, it's here and it's up and it's running. So if we look at it, now we're actually going to use the servers, except that I'm going to change that too, because, of course, I'm having some issues with my network connection, because it always happens during a demo, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course.
So I'm just going to create a directory here. So I'll do it locally instead of across the network. So I'm going to go to my tools that we installed earlier, right here. So my PowerShell, my migration tools, and I'm going to copy, paste.
Nice.
So we're going to export server migration, server settings, feature DHCP, user, all, group, everything. We're going to configure, export the IP configuration, the path, and we're going to do it in the verbose manner. And basically, and now it wants a password, because what it's going to do is going to package that into a file that it's going to encrypt.
Encryption, and that's a really important part of these tools.
Yeah, so if I'm going to put that on the network drive, I don't want just anybody to be able to open it and get a look at what the inside of my network looks like.
Exactly.
So now it's exporting. The verbose tells you all the information that gets exported. One thing that's really crucial when you're doing DHCP migration is you want to make sure that your target server has got the exact same number of NICs than your source servers. Mm. Because when it exports it, it's actually going to export your NIC configuration.
Exactly.
Which is very important to realize, because once we import it into the next server, it's actually going to go change that IP configuration.
Mm. And I suppose particularly important there will be that that MAC address change as well, given the majority of DHCP is done via broadcast.
That's right. Mm. So, okay, so it transfers everything into a file. I'm going to go take that file and copy it to the network. Hopefully it will let me. DHCP, so a single file. I'm going to copy it, let's say, directly to my DC, because this is where it's going. I'm going to try to bypass the server altogether. Ooh. And I don't have access to that, so let's try something else. Maybe it's going to collaborate, yes. So it doesn't seem to have a problem this way, it has a problem the other way. And go to my new DC, which at this point is not a DC. Mm-hmm. It's still just a domain joined machine.
That's right.
Kyle will show you how to make it into a DC. And I go to my migration and my DHCP, and I've got the file right there. But since we're using the tools for our DHCP migration, mm-hmm, on my target, I need to do a few things. First, install the DHCP service.
Absolutely.
Okay. Something that's, I wouldn't say poorly documented, but something that's kind of like very easy to miss of that is once you've installed the DHCP service, you need to actually complete the configuration of it.
That's right. And there's quite a few of these services that have those post-configuration tasks.
Yes. If you don't finish the configuration of it in Server Manager. So if I'm going to go here and refresh, I'm going to get that little notification area that I need to complete it. If I don't complete it and then import my DHCP service from the migration tool, I'm not actually going to be able to finish it.
That's right. It won't be authorized and all sorts of stuff, right?
Absolutely. Mm. So I'm just going to go here and commit it. And now it's authorized and it's on the network. So everything is cool at that point. I'm going to go to my PowerShell and I'm going to add my Snap-in. So that's Snap-in, so that's the server migration tool that we've installed. I just didn't bother to go through to the to where that tool is installed. I'm just going to add the snippet.
Sounds fair.
And I'm going to import except that, oh, it did find it. Okay, great.
Fantastic.
It wants the password so it can unencrypt it. Now it's going to collect the data and start migrating or importing all of those settings locally.
And of course, the great thing here is if it does fail, who cares? Because the other one is still running.
It's still running.
Any interruptions.
No. So all we'd have to do is go to the other one and start the service again.
Yep.
Okay, so it's telling us and verbose where it's actually created or installed, imported the DHCP user, the DHCP operator group, all that information that needs to be there. But if I go to my network settings, remember earlier this was a .11?
Yes, indeed.
And now it's a .10
wow.
because it imported the information from the old server.
Exactly.
So I'm just going to go here and change the property.
And I think, too, it's worth pointing out that how important the fact is that it grabs those local groups as well, because it's, you know, it's all great in our demo systems where we don't necessarily have those local groups populated with any individual users or anything like that. But in the real world, that DHCP users group is likely to be populated with certain administrators that are responsible for being able to see into that. And if we don't grab that information and we haven't documented it somewhere, well, we're in a bit of trouble once we finish that migration.
That's right. So let me just make sure here that my service is stopped. Because the last thing we want is to have multiple DHCP servers on our network at the same time.
It's not like we're leaving the job under bad circumstances.
No.
So we'll make sure everything's good.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to unauthorize that server so I can't come back up. And the .10, I'm going to authorize it because now we're just going to have the one.
Mm.
So that's closed. That's done. So now we are ready to do on our main DC is to start the service. Waiting to start, and it has started. So if I go to my machine, not DNS, DHCP, start my DHCP monitor, manager. And now I will show that the scopes are there. They're turned off. It needs to take a little bit of time to actually get the authorization and the authentication to the network.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it requires just a restart of the service, mm-hmm. but those are going to just come right back up.
I must admit, I've had times where I've had to just authorize again as well. Sometimes it doesn't appear to pop
yeah.
up.
And then there's a netsh command to actually yank or add that authorization to the domain if it didn't work through the GUI, because it is kind of finicky sometimes when you're taking registry information and information like that and you're basically shoehorning it into another system.
Mm.
It's not a 100% process,
mm.
which is why doing it in a source target scenario or a migration scenario gives you an out that said that didn't work, stop that, go to the other one, restart the service, and you're good to go.
Absolutely.
Okay. So while this is restarting, let's go back to our deck. For migrating DHCP, let's just go back and kind of review what we've just said, because we kind of skipped that file, but we all like to look at PowerPoints all day, right?
Well, of course, absolutely. Wouldn't be a Microsoft presentation without Death by PowerPoint.
That's right, which is the most important part is make sure that your discovery, so your the amount of NICs you've got on that server, that the IP address, you know which ones are going to be identified, your binding. If you've got multiple IP address on that server, you want to make sure that your binding is proper when you move to the next IP address, so it can affect basically assign an IP address to a NIC that may not be connected to the switch that you need to be connected to, especially in the multi-home type of situation. So you got to do you got to look at your. I'm having a great time right now. Shift F5, by the way.
Always works.
Always works. to look at your NICs and migrate the information. And very important to deauthorize and remove the service from the old server, because the last thing you want is to have a rogue DHCP server going on.
Right.
And then start and authorize your server and then retire the old one. Mm. Done. Now, if we look at these machines, so I've got a Windows 8 machine here in my environment. And if I look at the IP address that I've got, my DHCP is still pointing at 10.
Yes.
So going to a command prompt, let me make that a little bigger for you. And just do a standard IP config release and an IP config renew.
Absolutely.
It'll pick up the new IP. So one of the things that you need to be able to check is what is the lease time on your DHCP leases. Mm. If it's too short, you may end up with having some unneeded traffic on your network. If it's too long, then if you've made any changes, your end machines are not going to get the change. So we've already changed the DNS server, but those people that, let's say, if you've got a week worth of lease, well, that's going to take a week for them to actually get the new DNS server back up. So you got to be able to look at that. So,
and one thing that we've done a really good job of over the years and the various versions of Windows Server that have come up is changing the default on the lease time. On DHCP. We've done that pretty much every single release, haven't we? So you never quite know what you're going to get.
So now if we look at it, now on my DHCP server, I've got my new server that's running.
Brilliant.
Pretty easy to do. So DHCP is done. So we've done DNS, we've done DHCP. Most of the foundation services are done.
Awesome. What about my file shares, man?
File shares? There's two things. There's file shares and then there's DFS.
Oh yeah.
So file shares, very easy to do a file share. So you could use the tools to do the send server migration data to prepare one machine to send it encrypted, because you could give it that password again, and at the other end to receive it. And if for any of you that are asking what the encryption protocol is, I have not looked into it. I believe it's AES, but I'm not 100% sure. Mm. So let's just say you wouldn't want to actually copy that data across, let's say, an internet connection.
Absolutely.
But if it's within your network or across a secure VPN connection, then you're still fine. So you got that double protection. So for other shares and other data, either use the send server migration data and the receive server migration data from the target server, or in my case, I would probably be more inclined to use a robocopy for that. In terms of migrating DFS, it's also fairly straightforward. If you've got DFS, that means you've already got your DFS namespace in your directory. Mm. Now, what's the easiest way to do this?
DFS? Surely we could, I don't know, maybe add another machine and then let it replicate.
Ta-da!
Hey!
Wasn't that hard? That was wonderful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All you have
that
to
wasn't
do...
a Dorothy Dixer at all, everybody. For those of you that are in Australia, I was looking at this slide as well.
So if we look at our file server here, so we're in the 2003 file server. I'm going to start my DFS management, and I've got already my DFS root already established, or so 10.2014.com/public. It's pointing at, which is probably why I was having some issues right now, my DFS namespace has gone kaplooey.
No.
But typically you go to your DFS namespace, go to the server, click add, point it to your 2012 server, making sure that the roles are installed on that 2012 servers ahead of time. And then you just join it to the DFS, mm-hmm. create a replication group that includes that server,
yep.
and let nature take its course.
Exactly. And then once that's all done, we can quite happily start removing all of those older servers.
That's right.
It couldn't get any more painless than that.
You would. Yes.
Yes. Couldn't get any more painless. Yes.
I had to think about that one for a second.
That was the important part.
Now, if we look at shares, so we've looked at DFS migration, which is really just adding it, letting it replicate. When the replication is done, then and all of the other DFS members have gotten that information, mm-hmm. then you just go and remove the old DFS from that, and then you can just decommission it because nothing is going back to it.
That's right.
However, if you're in an environment where you're not using a DFS, that you actually go and whack server name, whack share name,
yes.
then you need to be able to export that.
Right.
I'm sorry to say there's no automated tool to actually move a share from 2003 to 2012 or two. What you need to do is you have to migrate the shares. You can do one share at a time using
using that process.
Process, yes.
That's going to take a while if you've got a lot of shares.
So if you've got a lot of shares, but you got to do it one share at a time. Because if you look here, it's actually looking for the source path. D shares. So if I look at my server, go to my computer on my drive D, in shares. So right now I don't have a lot, just my applications mm-hmm. and my group information, sort of finance, IT, marketing, all the information. So it will do that share.
That could be a lot of work in the end of the day. I mean,
that could be an awful lot of work at the end of the day. The other way you could do it, which works, however, I will say that it's a big however. You go to your registry and under current control set, not current version, current control set. Why am I not looking at the right place? Oh, there we go. System, current control set, services. In the Landman, remember the old Landman?
Oh yeah.
Don't we love that one? Landman servers, and you got all the information about your shares here. What you can do is export that into a reg file, clean it. The next server doesn't need to point to the original print hidden share.
Absolutely.
You may not want to move everything. The default share, you don't want to move the default share because that server's already got
That's
a default
right.
share.
Don't need it again.
So you have to go default, change it, edit it, and then import it into the other share. Before you do that, you got to copy your data. Mm-hmm. And then you use to copy the data, the easiest part is to use RoboCopy. That's what I use.
Right.
You can do the send and receive with the server migration tool. However, like you said, it's one share, one directory structure at a time. If you've got large installation and large file shares, it's going to take forever. But it does transfer everything. So the share information, the ACLs, the files, the timestamps, and so on, which you can replicate with RoboCopy. So it's easy with RoboCopy to just say RoboCopy source target /E for every empty directory /Z for restartable. So if it stops in the middle for God knows what reason, you can fix this and then restart it. It'll pick up where it left off. /SEC for security. Mm-hmm. So it can transfer the information. /copy all. So your attributes, your timestamps, everything will get transferred. So you get an identical copy elsewhere. Once the data is there, so their file structure is there, then you import that registry file. And when that registry file is imported, then your file, you just have to restart the Landman server service, and your shares are there.
Lovely.
Note to everybody who wants to do that or are migrating shares. It's very important that you understand that while you're migrating things, you want to stop access to them.
Yeah, that would help.
That would help. And a lot of times people end up forgetting to stop the landman service on the source machine.
Yes.
While they're transferring, especially if you've got lots and lots of data, because if you've got lots of data, it's going to take a long time. If it takes a long time while you're moving that data, somebody else in your environment is saving more data
absolutely
into
right.
it, or changing files.
That's not coming
files.
Across. Yeah.
It's not going to be connected. Mm. So you stop the landman, you copy what you can, then you start it on the new one. Or you do it one group and you break it down into something that'll fit overnight or something that'll fit over the weekend. But please don't just leave the server there and just copy the data. You'll have to do it 2 or 3 times. You'll have to go back to tape, unless you're using System Center DPM or things like that to protect your data. So it's not rocket science, and it's very straightforward, but your process has to be thought through and tested.
That's right.
In lab, we all test, right?
Remember, 200 days plus a bit more, perhaps.
Yes,
you're
that's
a
what
a lot of this stuff done in that first 150 days or so, aren't you?
Absolutely. Mm. Well, that's why when somebody says, "Wow, it doesn't take me 300 days to migrate a server," did you run a test? Did you try it once or twice with a significant amount of data?
Yeah, it's all very well when you tried it with 15K. And it looks really good.
Yeah, because in about 3 seconds, you're done.
That's right. And then we're doing 15 terabytes. And we're like,
Hang
on.
yeah, especially if you're doing to 2012, at least you can team your NICs.
That's right.
And take
that's
advantage
right.
of that bandwidth.
If you haven't tested this sort of stuff, it's going to bite you.
But if you don't, exactly. Mm. So now we've migrated our file shares and our DFS. Our DNS is done. Our DHCP is done. Our file shares and our DFS are done. The only thing left to do is the print server.
Oh,
the
print server, man.
Is fairly straight. Actually, of all of them, it's the easiest because you do it right into the GUI.
Well, show us that.
Yeah. Hopefully my network issues are not going to get into...
And of course, if you're like everybody else out there, you will of course know that the two primary functions of printers, there is a primary and a secondary function of the printer, and the primary function of the printer is to jam, and the secondary function of the printer is to break down, I do believe. It's,
oh, I'm sorry. I had never heard that one before. First function of the printer is to jam. Good.
Anyone ever seen Office Space? Remember that bit? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, right?
So we can export... Where's my print server? Oh, I don't know, print server. So I've got my local print server using the print management console in 2003. So I look at my print console and I can just say to my print server, where is that? No. Printers. There we go. I lost track of it.
Your print server is...
Export.
No. Right-click print management, is it?
Print management, that's what I was... I don't want to add or remove it. I got another one. However, you just export the... Actually, Kyle is doing the print server migration.
I can do that later on, yep.
Yeah. You have it on your machine?
I do have it on my machine, so we'll look at that later.
We'll go to that later when I figure out where I am. And then in 2012, just to start your print management. So install the print servers on your machine using the add roles or features. Mm-hmm. Once that's installed, go to the print server manager, right-click, import, point to that file. It'll come import all the queues, the ACLs, the printers, and then it actually go out and... do you have it there?
It's on my 2008 box, I do, but that's all right. We can show that a little bit later on. It's not a problem.
Okay, so that basically takes care of the printer. Not the printer, but the foundation services. So if we look...
Awesome.
In summary, we looked at our migration versus upgrades. The support status, which is the important thing for everybody to remember. Mm. We will not extend it.
No way.
Well, I say that, but touch wood. No, we will not extend it. Migration tools are good. However, look into your arsenal of things. If you can script it, if you can robocopy it, if you look at all these tools that you already have to do this. And a lot of the migration process is knowing how the system works.
Absolutely.
So if you know where DHCP actually stores its configuration, where it stores its file and its data, then you migrate it. It's easy to extract it and migrate it because there is no tool for it. For things like DNS, fairly straightforward again, just export, clean it, or else you're going to basically garbage out, garbage in, which is the other way around. Your file share, your DFS, that just takes time and planning, and then your print servers.
Awesome. All right, well, I think it might be time for a break.
Really?
Hey, what do you reckon? You need a coffee?
I need a coffee. Yeah, my coffee's dead.
You need a coffee over there, Kyle?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, everyone needs a coffee, it looks like. All right, well, we might break for around about 10 minutes now, so just take some time, grab yourself a drink, settle back, and we will see you back here in very, very soon.